Ladies and boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to Ring the Bell. And straight off the bat, let's announce a replacement for this show. Ross Bell is not available. He is not here. But don't worry, don't fret, don't panic, because we have drafted a more than suitable replacement. Please welcome Mr. Martin Brain.
Hello, mate.
You all right?
Yeah, good, mate. You?
Cool. Yeah, I'm good. Thanks for stepping into the breach at almost the last minute. We wanted to still bring a show out this week. So we have got together once again to go over this last week's worth of Raw and SmackDown. We have the King of the Ring tournament ongoing, the Queen of the Ring tournament. The PLE in Saudi Arabia has taken shape.
It is indeed, yeah. It's looking quite a card already.
Right, let's jump straight into this. Monday Night Raw from Hartford, Connecticut, the home of WWE, of course, virtually. It started off where the commentators were discussing the King and Queen of the Ring tournaments. They confirmed, which was a slight change to what was advertised, that there will actually be three televised matches for each tournament, and then the other matches are held on the live events this weekend as we record this, as you hear this. So despite eight matches being announced for Raw, there will actually only be six matches on Raw and two on the live events. Why do we think this change? I don't understand why this needs to be advertised as one thing if it wasn't going to be.
Yeah, no, personally, it's a bit of an odd one, if I'm being honest. Whether it's just maybe, I don't know, trying to award the people for going to the live house shows that, oh, here you go, we'll give you a tournament match, maybe. But yeah, it is strange and that, and you'd think they'd want to televise them all, really, but it is what it is.
Okay, Raw kicked off with Judgment Day in the ring. Damian Priest, the world champion, of course, was in. He apologised, or wanted to apologise, for his actions at Backlash France 2 days earlier, where he got into a bit of an argument with Finn Balor and JD McDonough following his defence against Jey Uso. So he apologised for that. Finn Balor then assumed that because Drew McIntyre had been taken out of the King of the Ring tournament due to an injury, as announced before the show, he thought he'd get a buy into the next round. That makes sense. Fine. However, Adam Pearce came out and scuppered those plans by announcing that Jey Uso would be coming in as a replacement, which would have worked fine as a nice pop if WWE hadn't announced before the show that Jey was going to be in. That seems like an oversight.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, if you're going to want that raw, genuine crowd reaction and that, yeah, surely you just keep it as a complete surprise and just wow the crowd and that. Yeah.
Jey went on to beat Finn in the tournament match. So Jey advances. Finn Balor, what's happening with him right now? He signed a new deal, but he doesn't seem anywhere closer to progression. He's just in the same holding pattern. Like, I don't know where you go with Jey at the moment, coming off of an unsuccessful challenge to the world title at Backlash. He's in the King of the Ring next round now, but where does Finn go? It's a strange one.
Yeah, yes, it is a bit of an odd one. Obviously, we all know this is leading to some point Damien versus Finn, and I'm all for it. But yeah, it's just an odd one how we're going to get there. And at the same time, surely they've got to try building Finn up a bit, because obviously, try not to sound too disrespectful, but he's just been lulling a bit or being wasted in the tag team division. Which, yeah. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure how they're going to get there either. It's a bit of a puzzling one because, obviously, like you say, logically, after Jey unsuccessfully beating Damien, surely he wouldn't get another opportunity through the King of the Ring tournament. So, yeah, it's just sort of like, where's the whole payoff and that? And, you know, bigger picture, where's it going? It just seems confusing at the minute, the long-term plan.
Yeah, but we will see. Obviously, it's only 1 week, but you do look at it's the losses that start to tally up a bit for Finn, and obviously Jey loses at the pay-per-view, bounces back with a win in the King of the Ring, so we will see. Backstage, Drew McIntyre is fuming at Adam Pearce for being replaced by Jey Uso in the tournament. Pearce told, wasn't about Jey, it's about the fact that Drew is injured, his elbow is still injured. He's not medically cleared, so Drew basically huffed and got in his car and left the building. And just he drove out a shot, who should appear but the man that's been stuck all weekend at WWE HQ is CM Punk. In a lovely yellow sports car as well.
Indeed. Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is all just fueling the fire to Drew just constantly being screwed over, overlooked, this, that, and the other, and sort of, you know, he'll inevitably get his chance at Clash at the Castle, I'd imagine.
So we got treated now to another one of their now famous and now clearly liked camera shots. So Punk gets out of the car and Adam Pearce confronts him. And Punk basically says to him, get the trucks, play my music. I have something to say. I have business to take care of. We see Punk walk through the backstage area past Chad Gable, who was chastising the Alpha Academy. And Punk walks out through the curtain straight to the ring. Camera follows. I love these camera shots. They add something completely different to what we've ever had before.
Yeah. Yes. They've really stepped up with their production and that, and sort of tried new and different things that ever since certain Kevin Dunn departed the company and that. But and obviously I think it's good what they're doing with Punk and that, because obviously although he's not wrestling and that, you know, he's still around all the time and that, and he's doing bits and pieces out to keep the interest going and that. And obviously, well, I don't know, is it roughly SummerSlam we're looking at? He's sort of going to be medically cleared and that.
Depending on progress, it could well be. They've not really said too much regarding an actual time frame, so it could be one of those where they'll work it a bit to maybe fit with their plans and what they're looking for. Punk basically cut a promo on Drew, telling him to come back to the arena, tell everyone to get their phones out and tweet Drew McIntyre saying, come back, Punk's waiting for you. Pat McAfee obviously did that. I found it weird that there was no mention or recap whatsoever of Punk's social media activity at WWE headquarters over the weekend. There was no mention of that at all. I thought it would have been either like a show-long angle where we saw clips of stuff but no mention. It was very weird why there was nothing about that, given how much Punk put into that over the weekend.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one, because didn't they do it a month or two ago with like The Miz and that as well? Like he got locked in the cupboard in an arena or something or other, or like in one of the like locker rooms or whatever.
Yeah, it just seems to be a rare disconnect between one department and the other almost. It's like it's either that Punk's just going to business for himself essentially on social media and doing stuff that isn't meant to go anywhere, or he did that because he was meant to, but then they just didn't follow up on it or didn't. Yeah, it was just weird while there was no mention of it. But it confused me, that one, if I'm honest. This is great. Punk and Drew are building their feud even more with no physicality whatsoever. It's other than obviously the little scrap they had at Mania, it's all verbal right now, and it's building this feud up as one of the hottest things in the company. And we're still realistically at least 3 months away from seeing it go anywhere as far as a payoff as a match. So, yeah, it's great for Drew that he can do this and stay over and relevant while injured. Same with Punk. It's working out really well for both. Drew actually released I don't know if you saw a video he put on his social media over the weekend, basically to the soundtrack of Stan by Eminem, writing like a letter for Punk. It's great. Drew's on fire with this, and you can see why he's now reportedly so happy with his creative with signing the new contract, because this is all great for him. Perfect.
Yeah. Try not to go off too much on a tangent and setting someone who don't really speak about too much at, but it seems a lot of the talent are coming out and sort of saying about like how great things have been like the last 4 or 5 months or whatever the rough time scale is and that. But obviously at the same time, it's good and that. And obviously, you know, there's nothing worse than just having a disgruntled workplace and that, and sort of, you know, people just almost, you know, turn up, right, let's get on with this sort of thing attitude.
You can tell through the work and through the way the talent are talking in interviews and stuff that there is definitely a shift in morale, and there's a shift in workplace like happiness and contentment. Yeah. Contentment, I think it comes out a lot more, I think you can see in a lot of the stuff we're seeing at the moment.
Yeah, and to be honest, I think it's quite a testament as well when you've even got guys like Orton coming out and commenting on it, because I think he touched on recently, didn't he, sort of like, you know, I think it was about 5-6 years ago, he was sort of like really struggling with his back injury or whatever, and he like went to Vince, so went, oh mate, I need some time off, like, you know. And yeah, I think sort of essentially, didn't he sort of almost get like, oh, you know, it's just part of the job, just get on with it sort of thing.
Basically, yeah. And that was Orton, who at that time even still was a was a veteran at that point, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, and it's people like that. It's people that have been through all the different kind of, you know, changes, both in regime and practices and all this sort of thing, and different eras that we've had in WWE over that time, especially like an Orton of, since what we're talking, 20, 22 years now. So to hear him come out and talk about how much, how different this is now is very telling. You see that the work that the people are putting in, and clearly that the happiness or a lot less frustration than there was before.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, Queen of the Ring time now. Io Sky beat Natalya in the tournament match. This was fine. I think it was the right outcome. I think Io Sky has more of the upside going forward. I don't think Natalya needs to win. Like, she's kind of solid in her role. She can work heel or face. She can, obviously, she's doing some NXT stuff. So yeah, I think this was a good showcase.
Yeah. Because it's like you touched on slightly. It's sort of like she's almost doing like this mentor role in that, and NXT in that as well. And so, you know, I can't remember who it was now, but yeah, she's sort of like trying to take people under her wing and that, aren't she? And so, you know, I'll teach you the ways of what you need to do and that and everything. But yeah, Natalia's just one of those people. So, you know, not to be too disrespectful, but like, you know, she's never going to have another title reign in WWE and that, but yeah, she can be there in like that veteran role and that, and sort of, you know, put in solid work and that, and you know, everyone's happy at the end of the day.
Exactly.
But
after the match, Dakota Kai announced that Asuka is injured and therefore will not be in the Queen of the Ring tournament, and she's going to take her place against Lara Valkyria in the tournament match later on tonight.
Yeah, again, a little strange with like announcing the match and then like, you know, almost last minute, oh yeah, she's injured, so no, that's not happening.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether the Asuka injury was known ahead of time. Like, was it known before the announcement, or like the preview and obviously the advertising for Raw? So yeah, it's a few of these we've had or will have in regards to changes to the tournament, like the entrance. King of the Ring time now. Ilya Dragunov making his, I guess, official Raw debut as a Raw superstar. I was in, apart from the night after Mania Raw he was on. Ricochet, this match, Ilya Dragunov's going to fucking own this program. This was insane.
Yeah, he's outstanding, isn't he? And then obviously, you know, again, Ricochet, he's just an outstanding worker and that. And it's annoying at times that, because when you look at the roster and that, there's so many guys that sort of don't get the proper shine that they necessarily deserve and that. But yeah, when you compare it with the big picture and that, it's just all like, you know, where can you fit it all in and that. But yeah, Ricochet's just been brilliant for years and that. And yeah, and obviously, like you're saying, Dragunov's just going to be outstanding for the future.
It's incredible the work he's got ahead of him in terms of who he's working with and who he can work with now. Like that, that roster on Raw has so many diverse talents that he can put something special on with. And I don't think we've even come close to even scratching the surface of what Dragunov can achieve.
No. And obviously try not to bring up sort of stuff that's already happened, but at some point down the line, give me Dragunov and Gunther again.
Oh yeah, it's bound. I think Dragunov even spoke about it on digital thing about it's destiny that they're both on the same brand, and absolutely is. Like I just want those two on a PLE with a 40-minute banger. That'll do me. Like fine, I don't care if it's on Raw in a 20-minute main event or a 45-minute pay-per-view clash. Just those two in the ring. It is untouchable. Nothing will come close to it.
No, absolutely.
Okay, back to the Queen of the Ring tournament now. Zoe Stark beat Ivy Nile. Stark seems to be, to an extent, protected. Like, she's obviously, she had a pretty big year last year, obviously with the Trish and Becky stuff, and she seems pretty looked after. Obviously, Ivy's recently come up, but Zoe seems to be the one more of an upward trajectory at the moment, especially in this tournament.
Yeah. Yeah, because obviously I'm trying to think, was it last year Zoe was called up, or was it the year before?
I think it was last year she showed up in the Trish Becky feud, didn't she?
Yeah, it just sort of seems after sort of the Trish Becky stuff and that sort of, you know, she was around, but sort of maybe not necessarily doing an awful lot on that. So yeah, whether they're sort of getting back to like the right, we need to formulate a plan and that for Zoe and that, like, you know, if we're going to do these plans and that and have her be a big figure within the division and that, like, you know, we need to put our finger out a bit.
Absolutely. Okay, Chad Gable in now, one of my favorite, just one of my favorite characters in the company right now. This version of Chad Gable is absolute money, as far as I'm concerned. He took on Bronson Reed, went to a no contest when Sami Zayn ran in and attacked both men. Triple threat, please. And thank you. Wow. this is, I love this because it's quite simply Chad wants the RC belt. Bronson wants the RC belt. That's all you need. That is literally. No matter, you can put a lovely story around it, you can put packaging around it and the bows and whistles and the bells, but at the end of the day, give me a feud where it's based on one person has the belt, the other person, or in this case, other two people want the belt, and that's enough. It's all you need. It's basic wrestling logic. They want what he has.
Yeah.
That's it. That's
yeah,
it.
Definitely, yeah. I love Gable as well. I mean, you know, to be fair, I've really enjoyed his work ever since Alpha, the original Alpha Academy, so to speak, with the American Alphas with Jason Jordan and that. But yeah, the work he's doing at the minute is brilliant. And that, I mean, me personally, I'd make the argument: does he really need to have the American Alphas? The Alpha Academy around with him, other than just to generally gain heat and sort of put the others down and that. But I don't know. I think it's all like ran its course.
I like the idea that he has got them doing his bidding, and it's like he's got his own faction, whether they want to kind of be in it or not. They're blindly leading, like though they're blindly following him still, despite the fact that he clearly is. You know, he's this horrible bad guy and this mean guy, and he's, you know, he's only looking out for himself. He doesn't care about them, but he's using them. And I like that it gives another layer, because it's not just a lone wolf out for the title or whatever, or revenge. It's he's using people and the manipulation. And that's completely different than we've seen before from a Chad Gable. So not only has he got this heel side to him now, he's now got the manipulation, and that's just completely, it's like the onion. You peel it and you unravel it, and it's just, it's great. The work they've done with Chad has been outstanding in the last few months.
Yeah. It's been absolutely brilliant. And he's got to get the belt at some point.
The segment ended with Bronson Reed as the big man putting both men down. So again, Bronson still comes out on top, like, again, as he should. He's a monster. He's a big bad dude, and it's going to take some beating him. And at the moment, the two Zayn and Gable are not able to keep him down. It all makes sense. Okay, Michael Cole in ring interview time with the World Women's Champion Becky Lynch. She spoke about the new wrestlers come up from NXT in the draft. Of course, she put over Lyra. Liv Morgan then comes out, and she appears to be just a heel now. Just straight up heel. No ambiguity, no tweener. She is just all in black. She is a heel. I don't know if I missed something, but that's just happened now, it appears.
Yeah, apparently so. I mean, obviously, this is where they're going with the title picture and that, but yeah, I can't help but feel and get worried with Becky. He's starting to get a bit of the Charlotte treatment and that, and so, you know, right, what are we going to do with the women's title? Oh, sod it, just put it on Becky. It'll be fine for a few months.
I know Russ and I discussed this a couple of weeks ago after Becky won, and looking at the Battle Royal, because obviously Rhea goes down with the injury. If in doubt, Battle Royal. It's the kind of tried and tested formula. And you look in that field of 15, 16 women that they had, and there was only a small handful of women that realistically could have the belt put on them. Nia could have easily been, but obviously if they knew they're moving her to SmackDown, okay, that's why they didn't do it. Liv realistically needs to only win the belt from Rhea or beating someone like a Becky for that rub. So it couldn't really be Liv winning it in a Battle Royal. It doesn't fit.
No.
Pretty much it. but it's not many people you could have put it on. Becky is kind of, for all the talk about Charlotte and obviously the 15-14 range, whatever it is, and she's the go-to and the default option, it's because she is. And in this case, Becky kind of is. She's the safe. She's got that veteran respect. You know, she can play heel if she has to. You know, if there's that kind of grunt, that disgruntlement about, oh, she got the title again, she can turn it to a heel if she needs to. She can be that you know, that face warrior kind of as she is, and she's gone through things. I have no issue with Becky being champ. I think it opens some doors for people, especially where she's going to put over the younger talent and talking about wanting to work with them and everything. It got us heel Liv Morgan, which, with Rhea not being around for undetermined amount of time, Liv could have been aimless. She's got something now. She's got a direction. And working with Becky can only be good for her as well.
Yeah. The only thing I worry about with Liv is, personally, I think she's better at chasing than being the champion.
As a babyface, yes, because most are. Most babyfaces are better as the chase. But as a heel, she might be better as the champ if she were to win it from Becky.
Yeah. The only thing I don't like what's going on at the minute with Liv is this whole silly, subtle, is she like taking over as Mammy with Dominic and that. I'm just like, no, leave that the hell alone. Just
see, I like it because it plays into the Rhea thing. Like Liv's story is about the revenge, the Liv revenge tour. That Rhea put her out of action for months. Rhea then obviously become on top of the world and won the women's championship and kept it and all this and become the star of the division, the star of the company. And Liv felt disrespected. And Liv comes back, doesn't win the Royal Rumble, doesn't win the Elimination Chamber. So like she still can't get her shot at Rhea and get her revenge. Rhea gets injured at the hands of Liv, so she gets a bit of revenge. We can't take the belt off her because Rhea's not the champion anymore. So what's the next biggest thing to take away from Rhea if you can't take away the championship? You take apart Rhea's life, which is Judgment Day. You take away Dom. I think it's an easy story they've got to tell, and the subtle things they're doing, like see him in the background walking out the same locker room moments apart. There was something with Dom's bandana that he was wearing in the opening segment. Liv had it in her pocket in some photos later in the night. It's the little things like that where it's like, it's not in your face. It's subtle, but it's there. And it can easily be referenced in the future if they need to go back to it. And it all builds up to when Rhea comes back as predictably the big baby face, Liv's already a heel and probably stolen Dom. Like it sets the Liv Rhea thing up perfectly for the future.
Yeah, I suppose we'll have to wait and see sort of what happens in the next month or so. But that's just sort of my personal thoughts at the moment.
That's fair. So, Liv comes out now a heel, talking about not getting respect from Becky or from Rhea Ripley, talking about what she's done, her credentials and her worth. Damage Control come out and surround the ring. They surround Lynch and Morgan, ready to have a fight and everything. And then Morgan rolls out the ring because that's what heels do. And she left Becky alone, fed her to the wolves. Lara come out for the save, and that was the segment. It was good. It put Lara over, put her in a position where she's credible. Obviously, Becky put her over in her promo. Liv put over the heel persona. This was mission accomplished for me in this.
No, it was good.
So Lara was already in the ring, and she obviously was facing Dakota Kai in the Queen in the Ring. She won, which again, given that the setup was the right way to go, I think they've got something in Lara, and I think there's if they do it right, there could be some money to be made with her with the feud that she's got ahead of her.
I mean, obviously she had admittedly, sort of the short time she was there, she had a very successful run in NXT. So, let's wait and see what she can do on the main roster. But it's definitely a very big step in the right direction on that. So,
So, with Liv, I'm going to circle back around to your point. Where do you think the best the use of Liv is. So obviously, take her, as you, in your view, take her away from Dom, leave all that behind as far as the Judgment Day stuff. Where do you see Liv's best, like the best use of her in this character?
Yeah, so obviously I'll get your point now, sort of referencing with Rhea, because obviously that's you know, that's the big payoff and that and everything. And yeah, obviously it's difficult while she's out injured and that. And yeah, I've just sort of had the mindset that, like, you know, just leave the Judgment Day stuff alone and that for the time being and that. But yeah, it's a tough one, because obviously, you know, we need to keep her relevant and sort of almost build her up as this, you know, this big baddie and that, and build her up. So yeah, whether they do just get her to be this massive heel against Becky for the next few months and build her up, and, you know, who knows, maybe she's successful at some point in the next few months, that gets the title off of Becky, and then inevitably, when the time's right, Rhea comes back, and then it's like, right, give me my title back, and then, you know, that's where it all sort of kicks off from. But yeah, unfortunately, with the Liv stuff, it is waiting for Ripley to return.
We will see. So Michael Cole was talking about the tournament bracketing, announced that the Shayna Baszler Zelina Vega match and the Rey Mysterio Kofi Kingston matches will take place at live events over the weekend. So we're not going to see those on TV. Apparently they will be filmed, so there may be highlights on next week's Raw and SmackDown of the respective matches. I think depending on if the time is there, I think you should at least show the finishes of the match if you're going to build up the tournaments. If you can't fit the matches on the show, at least show the endings.
Yeah, definitely. You've got to at least show the finishes.
Okay, main event. And my goodness gracious, what a main event. 15 minutes of just insane brawling, fighting, a match. The full match is on WWE's YouTube channel. I recommend, if you haven't already seen it, go and watch it. Or if you have seen it, go and watch it again. It's worth it. Gunther, Sheamus, yes. Just all of this. Yes, please.
Banger after banger.
It literally is. And again, Sheamus is losing more of the weight. He's looking as close to old Sheamus as he was before. Like, it's insane, the transformation he's already made in 3 weeks.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, and obviously he explained everything behind in that. But then obviously, I think people have got to be conscious of this day and age, especially like in the last few years, and that's all, you know, should like, you know, the crowd and that and everything be openly, you know, and like fans in general be, you know, fat shaming over social media and that and everything. Yeah. And all that stuff and that, like, you know, it's all unnecessary in that. And it's all like, you know, I've never really properly sat down and watched like full episodes out, but like, I know in the past that Sheamus has got his own YouTube channel and that, and he literally just does workouts with other wrestlers and that's all, you know, oh, you know, what's your typical workout and that. And yeah, the bloke's just insane in that, and the shape he keeps himself in. And yeah, fair enough, for whatever reason and that, you know, he put on a bit of weight and that whilst he was recovering that. But then obviously he touched on it and said, you know, I got called back like 2-3 weeks earlier than what I should have done and that. And like, you know, I didn't fully have the time to, you know, get myself into full ring shape and that and everything. But no, he's done brilliant ever since and that. Obviously, it was an easy opportunity for Drew to get some additional heat and that and whatnot with it and that. But Sheamus is just one of those guys. He just defies logic, especially like these last 5 years and that. Like, you know, he should have retired, what, 6-7 years ago in theory and that. But he's just an outstanding worker. You just put him in a match and he'll just absolutely demolish it.
And on the other side of the ring, Gunther is... I'm not sure he has an equal. I don't think possibly there's a better worker pound for pound in that company right now than Gunther.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. And yeah, obviously Sheamus definitely wore his scars. Say they purposely made the point of Gunther's handprint on his back and that. And
you could not pay me to take a chop from Gunther.
No.
You just couldn't. No. I just, yeah. No. I It's insane. We've spoken before about his, obviously, his physical transformation and the changes he's made and the dedication he's put in and the time to get to where he is. And the rewards are coming, without a doubt. Like, this is going to be Gunter's year. But by the end of the year, this man will be or will have been a world champion. He will be the number one guy, the biggest heel. He is on another level. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, and it's crazy. He's like literally lost like no power whatsoever in him getting his weight down at. Because so you see videos of like when he was on the indie circuit, that you know maybe a couple of years before like NXT and that come along, he would literally floor people with his chops and that.
Mm-hmm.
And the sounds were just mind numbingly painful and that. But yeah. Gunther's just outstanding, and yeah, without a doubt, he's going to be a world champion at some point. Hopefully, this year at some point, but we'll wait and see what they got planned for that. But yeah, obviously, he's had his record-breaking IC title. You know, the next natural progression is right. Get him in the main title picture.
Yep,
consistently.
Okay, that was Raw. We have movement in the King and Queen of the Ring tournaments. We have a setup for the Intercontinental Championship. We know where that's going. We'll get to that soon. So, yeah, we're moving on to SmackDown. Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. We're opening up with Nick Aldis in the ring, introducing the undisputed WWE champion, Cody Rhodes. A challenger has been determined. Cody's next opponent, following his grueling and Meltzer-rated 5 stars, clash with AJ Styles at Backlash France. AJ's first 5-star match since 2003, I believe, which is mental, 2003, 2005. Tell you what, one thing I will say, for all the people online that say Meltzer hates WWE, I've never known to be so generous towards WWE matches in regards to his ratings.
Yeah, definitely. I just find that mind-boggling that, you know, I've never paid attention to Dave's match ratings and that, if I'm being honest, but I find that absolutely baffling that that's his first 5-star rating since, what was it, 2003, 2000?
Which means that's his first WWE 5-star match, which, given some of the matches he's put on since he debuted, is mental.
Yeah, absolutely mind-boggling and that, but at times, all you need to do is just have a super kick party at times to get a 5-star Dave rating. Not that we're going to dive too much into that.
No, not today. Right, so yeah, the challenger has been determined. Cody's next opponent is set. And out comes US champion Logan Paul. I don't know about this one.
No, I'm slightly worried, if I'm being perfectly honest. I mean, obviously, don't get me wrong, they will put on a great match, but what they've added to the match at King and Queen of the Ring, it worries me. Why do we need that?
Yeah, there's a lack of clarification about this one. So, according to WWE.com's official preview for the match, it's champion versus champion to basically determine who's the biggest star on the show. There's no word yet as to what belt, if any, is on the line. But today, Cody tweeted or like subtweeted the or like quote tweeted the company thing about the match and said for all the gold. So is it title versus title, winner takes all, or is it a world championship match, or is it just champion versus champion for bragging rights? Like, because depending on what they're going to put on this, this is a really risky match to book a finish for, because Cody ain't losing that belt, but Cody also has no reason to become the US champion. So,
yeah,
I don't. Yeah, and if it's just for Cody's belt, then Logan's taken a loss when he's already the US champion. That it's very weird.
Yeah, it is strange. Hopefully they'll give more clarification in the next week or so. But yeah, if it's for both titles, that worries me. Because
is there no other people for Cody to fight? Like, they've got a roster full of people. Like it's a Saudi Arabia show, so essentially it's a house show. It's a glorified live event. Like, so nothing big really is going to happen, and Cody's not dropping the belt anytime soon. So
No.
is there no one else like he could face, neither heel that you could put him up against for a month? It's very weird that they're going straight to the Logan Paul match.
Yeah, it is an odd one. I mean, could you maybe make the argument because it's a Saudi show, sort of, does it matter with like the brand split and that and whatever, sort of, But yeah, like you say, it's mind-boggling that sort of, there's no one else that they could put against Cody. It doesn't seem the right time for either of them to be doing this match, and it's a very strange one. And because I think Graves even commented later on during the show, like, oh, it's champion versus champion in Saudi. So yeah,
Yeah,
slightly worried.
we'll wait for clarification, hopefully, about what exactly is on the line, if anything, here. Okay, tournament matches time now. Now, I don't think there will be actually announced any matches in terms of tournaments, so we didn't know what we were going to get in the King and Queen of the Ring tournaments on this show. So on the women's side, Nia Jax taking on Naomi. This one was interesting to me because Nia is new to the show post-draft. Naomi's obviously coming off the loss at Backlash France in the triple threat. Both women seem to need the win. Nia got it. Looked really good. The match was really good. Nia is on a tear since on this new run, on this recent run. For you, right outcome, wrong outcome?
Yeah, I think it's the right one. Obviously, you can build Nia up as this massive heel and that and everything, and she does it so well as well. And I think the problem with Naomi, she had it even before she left the company and, went to Impact and that and everything like that. But the thing is, she's one of those talents. They don't need a title on that. They're just solid workers. You just put her in a match that, and she'll do a solid job on that and put in a good performance at. But yeah, she just doesn't need the title.
Ross and I have asked this question on other shows, and it's not meant to be disrespectful, even though it sounds it. I don't really know what Naomi brings other than the entrance at this point. I wouldn't say she's doing things hugely better than others they already have or others could do
No.
with more time. And I just think I don't really know what worth or what I don't know.
Yeah.
There's no like way to word that doesn't sound disrespectful, and of course it's not meant like that, but I don't really know what does beating Naomi mean a lot for any for Nia Jax here? Like Naomi's not really won anything of note. She lost in the chamber, she lost in the triple threat, like I don't really know what a win over her does for Nia right now.
Well, nothing really, because it is basically a, well, yeah, you should be beating Naomi.
Okay, Carmelo Hayes up next after his loss to Cody Rhodes on last week's show. He took on Baron Corbin, making his big return to SmackDown after some time in NXT rebuilding himself. Carmelo won, but I have to say, Baron Corbin looked really, really good. He was a babyface here. Carmelo was a heel. It was just a really good match. And this Baron Corbin genuinely could do something on SmackDown. I was really impressed.
Yeah, I mean, I liked Baron Corbin when he was the Lone Wolf and that, coming through destroying NXT and that, and then sort of when he initially got on the main roster. But then obviously, I don't know who it was, but when he got the Money in the Bank briefcase out, he literally got shat on with that whole thing and that. And I was really disappointed in that because I was of the mindset of, he's going to cash in and, he is going to get that world title on that. And he just got treated so poorly in there and that. And then, yeah, obviously he's gone to NXT, rebuilt himself with Bron. And yeah, it was a fairly successful tag team run and that. And, he did what he needed to do at in NXT. And yeah, hopefully he's going to get his opportunity to shine and that now back on the main roster and that. And yeah, he's putting in some solid work.
Jay Cargill was up next, taking on Piper Niven in the Queen of the Ring tournament. I panicked when I saw this because Jade works better in a tag team situation because you can cover up the flaws. Mm. And I don't know if she's ready for this kind of match. However, hold my hands up. I enjoyed it. Jade looked good. Her and Piper worked well together. It got to show off Jade's power, which she has, like in spades. And her star, we say it every week. I know we do, but it's a broken record. She looks like an absolute megastar. Her aura may be unequaled. It's insane how good she looks and how much of a star she looks.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, obviously she's not stupid. She knows what she needs to work on that. And obviously, she's going to be given the chance to do that in WWE and everything like that. But yeah, like you say, she's got the potential to essentially be like the Rhea on SmackDown and that. Like, you know, she has the potential to potentially just take over that whole division and dominate for ages. It's just... Yeah, it's just sorting out the kinks and that and whatnot. And obviously, you know, the flaws that everyone's, you know, well aware of and that.
Exactly. Her tag team champion partner, Bianca Belair, is in action, the Queen of the Ring. She took on and beat Candice LeRae. I think was any surprise in the outcome. No. Bianca's Bianca. You know what she can do. She's good doing it. And you can put her in a solo thing. You can put her in a team with Jade. And it works. She's a really good person, I think, to have as that kind of... She's not in a singles title picture right now, but it doesn't affect her position and her star power. And she's helping Jade. But if you need to put her in a singles thing like this, you know what you're going to get.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, and again, Candice LeRae is one of those wrestlers that sort of, you know, I don't think she's ever going to be like a top women's champion and that or whatever in WWE and that, but you know, they'll keep her around because she's a solid worker and whenever she's called upon and that, she gets the job done, whatever way it needs to go.
Okay, time for the latest twist in the Bloodline saga, which has reignited since WrestleMania with Solo Sikoa taking over. Backstage, Heyman and Solo talking. Heyman, of course, hasn't spoken to Roman Reigns since Mania. Heyman took Roman out of the draft. Solo, shockingly, has claimed and said, I have spoken to Roman, and he has put me in charge of the Bloodline till he's back. And Heyman, you're now my wise man. I think it's obvious he's lying. Clearly, he hasn't spoken to Roman Reigns. I think this is great. This Solo is doing things I never knew he could do. And he has put himself firmly at the top of this whole angle. And without Roman being there, they have made Roman into possibly the number one babyface. Because every week now, every show, the crowd want Roman. When he comes back, my God, the pop he's going to get.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be insane, and the work's just been brilliant in the last.
They could genuinely drag this out for as long as possible. Roman versus Solo now becomes one of the biggest matches they have in such a short space of time as really from Mania to now. Roman versus Solo is now massive.
Yes, yeah, yeah, big time. I mean, I think. Is Roman scheduled to appear on the SmackDown before SummerSlam, I think?
I think he is. Now, that says to me either Solo maybe issues a challenge, Roman only comes and accepts the go-home show, or I don't know, or Heyman's put out and it's taken out and he brings Roman back, however you want to get there. Yeah. But the fact is, when Roman makes that big return, and we get that Solo Roman showdown. My God. I cannot believe the legs this story still has. We're 4 years into the Bloodline story. Like, well, 3.5 years, because Roman came back, was it payback to 2020, wasn't it? Because it was COVID year. So we're 3.5 years into the Bloodline story as it is. And it's got legs again. It's just completely turned on its head. And it's insane. It's one of the greatest stories that company's ever told.
Yeah, and you'd argue it probably is the story in the company in that as well. Obviously, you know, yeah, it's great. Cody finished his story and that and everything. And so, you know, he's doing his own thing and that. But everyone is literally talking about Roman versus Solo whenever that's going to happen.
Like obviously, Roman versus Rock is gone. Like no one, there was a bit of a thing on last or the other day. It was trending, right? And people still want Roman versus Rock, but Cody versus Rock is the separate issue now. They got their own thing that doesn't have to be related to the Bloodline. I said this on last week's show. Keep Rock away from the Bloodline. It's done. Roman and the Bloodline is the story now. It's circled back around to that. We're still telling that story and it's working.
Yeah, big Tom. I mean, me personally, I think I would prefer the second version of the ideas you said. You know, I'd prefer, like, you know, Solo either manipulates Heyman or, like, you know, takes him out and that. And then, yeah, Roman, whenever it's meant to be, just turns out, like, right, you've had your time abusing this power that you thought you had and everything. Like, you know, the big dog's back, you know, head of the table's back, you know, you know, get back in your position, boy, sort of thing.
Exactly it. That is it.
Yeah.
Okay, Bloodline continues. Tama Tonga in King of the Ring action. Originally was meant to face Bobby Lashley, which I was looking forward to because that could be an absolute banger. But Lashley was injured earlier in the week, a training injury suffered. So Angelo Dawkins gets put in his place. There was some grumblings online, but Montez Ford is the breakout star. But let's be honest, Tama Tonga's winning this match. Why put Montez Ford in there to lose? Like,
yeah, exactly.
You're putting someone in there to lose. Like, don't do that to Montez Ford. So Angelo Dawkins, this was the right choice for me. And this match was Tama's entrance. Deaf Rebel, whatever they're called, get a lot of stick for their music at the moment in WWE. But they have hit a home run with Tama Tonga's music. His entrance is just top, like elite, top league. He looks like a star with that, and it's working already. He's only been in the company a few weeks, and he is firmly established for me already.
Yeah, big Tom.
Tama Tonga advances, Dawkins loses. That's what his role was, and he did it well. Tama looks good. Bloodline go from strength to strength.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see sort of, you know, what they got planned on that for the Bloodline for the next month or so and that, and
main event, King of the Ring tournament, Randy Orton versus AJ Styles. These two always work well together, and here was no exception. My only disappointment is this again was another loss for AJ Styles. We said similar to Finn Balor on Raw, AJ, where does he go? Like, he lost at WrestleMania, he won to get the title match at Backlash France, he lost at Backlash France. Loses now in the King of the Ring tournament. Where is the trajectory for AJ Styles?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm at a bit of a loss of AJ because obviously it's been no secret. You know, he is getting towards the tail end of his story, shall we say, in professional wrestling and that. But I don't know how you'd get there, but I'd like to see one more AJ title run. Just to see where it would go on that and obviously enjoy that. But, I don't think there's enough words to describe AJ Styles and, you know, how great he is in the ring. And I think he's just one of those guys that no matter what the outcome or whatever, and that just people are just pleased and happy to see him perform and that, and just the consistent level he keeps all the time and that. He's just an outstanding worker, and obviously, you know, there's the jokes all the time. He could wrestle a broom and put on a 5-star match, and he full on could. I have no doubt about that.
Speaking of top line workers, Randy Orton, this man is one of the best. Like he looks incredible. He still works as good as he ever has, and this Orton could still do so much. Even at this point in his career, he just looks incredible at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the big thing with Randy is he's just happy and enjoying life and the work he does and that, because obviously, like, you know, not trying to go too far down the rabbit hole and that, but, like, you know, he's had all the previous issues that in the past that and pissing people off and this, that and everything and that. And so, you know, people probably argue it maybe took a few too many years for him to sort of wise up and that and everything that, but yeah, he's just going out there and just enjoying himself now and that, and it's brilliant and that, and then sort of, you know, when he was talking about the tag team a little while ago with Matt Riddle and that sort of, you know, he said, like, you know, some of the best and enjoyable stuff he did and that, and, you know, the stuff he couldn't do, Riddle was making up for him and that. And yes, it's just brilliant just to see Orton still perform at such a high level and that, and just enjoying himself and that. And, you know, and you can tell he is and that. And yeah, long may it continue.
That SmackDown, I really enjoyed this SmackDown. There was no time wasted. It was quick. It was punctual. It was beat, 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 straight into stuff. Stuff got done, progressed, good matches. This was a great use of SmackDown. Like, they used the time well. There was no lagging. It was just a really tight, solid episode. Really, really good.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, well, SmackDown's been really enjoyable for quite a while and that now. Mm. Obviously, you know, depending on how the book showed, Raw can be a bit of a, you know, oh, bloody hell, the third hour and that. But yeah, SmackDown's always been like, you know, the workers show and that.
Almost, and, yeah, it has.
You know, back in the day, I've always been a Raw guy and that, but, you know, the last few years of that, you know, SmackDown's just on another level at times and that.
Okay, yeah. So let's look how we're standing currently with the King and Queen in the ring. So this coming Monday on Raw, we are getting quarterfinals. We have Gunther versus the winner Rey Mysterio and Kofi Kingston. They're going to fight this weekend at the live event. So someone's getting chopped to oblivion this Monday, whether it be Kofi or Rey. We have Ilya Dragunov versus Jey Uso. My goodness, Jey versus Dragunov. I cannot wait for that.
Yeah, that's going to be a great match.
Sticking with the men on SmackDown next week, this is going to be good. Randy Orton versus Carmelo Hayes.
Ooh.
Can you imagine Carmelo's first few weeks on the SmackDown roster? He would have worked with Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton. What a start.
Yeah, couldn't get much better, even if he tried to book it himself.
We're also going to get Tama Tonga versus the winner of LA Knight and Santos Escobar, which happened in the live event. I do question, why are you putting LA Knight off of TV? Why are you not putting his match on TV? It's just, since he won at Mania and then lost in the tournament to determine the Backlash challenger, LA Knight's kind of floundering. I don't know why you keep LA Knight off TV. Like, we've said this on the shows before. I don't know where you put him, because he's not winning the world title on a show where Cody's the champion, because you don't take the belt off the man that finished the story and beat Roman Reigns. Logan Paul seemed to me the logical progression for LA Knight, but that never happened. And Logan's obviously busy with Cody now. What do you do with LA Knight? Is that even a question you can answer?
Honestly, no, I can't answer it. I literally have no idea where you go with LA Knight, because obviously the problem is, I don't know, whether you maybe put him in a feud with someone like Orton or something for a little while on that, because obviously he's done AJ and that. So, exactly. You know, yeah. Yeah, but obviously, to be fair, no matter who wins that match at the live show, they're taking the loss to Tama. Oh, yeah,
of course. Okay, Queen of the Ring now. So this come Monday on Raw, we're going to get Io Sky versus the winner of Shayna Baszler and Zelina Vega, which is on the live event this weekend. And we have Lara Valkyria against Zoe Stark. Should be a good one. An interesting outcome given how they're positioning both women, that one. Mm. On SmackDown, big one here, Nia Jax versus Jade Cargill.
Oh.
Now, this is a toughie, because do you put Jade in the semi-finals or do you give Jade her first singles loss? What do you do with that?
I think if you're going to give Jade her first loss, I think it's got to be like a crappy or like contested finish or whatever, or, you know, if there's like some heel shenanigans in there somewhere. So, you may have beaten me, but, you know, you cheated it. You cheated. You know, you didn't really get the win against me, sort of thing. But it's going to be an interesting one where they go with this, because obviously you'd look at the roster right now and sort of go, like, you know, Nia is the big heel on SmackDown. That, so, you know, you need to do the relevant work with her and build her up even more.
And the big one, of course, is on the other side of that SmackDown bracket, Bianca Belair is going to face the winner of Mitchin and Tiffany Stratton. You assume Tiffany's winning that. So Bianca versus Tiffany is a big one. Do you have Bianca and Jade in the semifinals? Like, you surely don't give away that match on SmackDown on TV. So
no.
Are the Biancas losing against Tiffany? And I don't know why you'd halt the progress that Tiffany's made since post-Mania.
Yeah.
You're either handing Tiffany her first singles loss or you're handing Jade her first singles loss. It's a strange one. It's a really tough book of decision. I'm really intrigued how they're going to get around this.
Yeah. And obviously as well, sort of thinking ahead to the next stage of the tournament, say for argument's sake, Nia and Tiffany win. How do you book that match then?
Both heels. Like, it's yeah. So you assume there's going to be a baby face. I mean, if you look on the Raw side, you've got Shayna or Zelina against Io Sky in one quarterfinal. Mm. And then you've got Lyra versus Zoe in the other quarterfinal. So the semifinals, you're looking at probably Lyra against Shayna or Io. Okay, heel versus face, that's fine. On SmackDown, do you go with Nia versus Bianca and Jade's been beaten and Tiffany's been beaten? Or do you go with Jade losing to Tiffany? Like, that's the thing. Do you have that heel versus face at the King and Queen of the Ring in Saudi Arabia? Because you've got to have a heel versus face, surely. Yeah. Like, that's the dynamic. It's a tough one. And look at the men's side as well. Like, we're going to get, possibly, Gunther versus Dragunov on the May 20th Raw in the semi-final to determine who goes to... Exactly. Whoa. Who goes to Saudi Arabia? Gunther versus Dragunov on Raw for the first time they're meeting on the main roster. Or do you have Dragunov lose already to Jay and then Jay faces Gunther? Because Gunther's surely not losing to Kofi or Ray.
Oh, no.
And on
no.
SmackDown, you got Randy or Carmella, or Carmelo against LA Knight or Santos and Tama. And I can't see Tama Tonga losing this early. So,
no.
Yeah, it's. Tama versus Randy seems the direction. So we assume Randy Orton's going to beat Carmelo and Tama will beat LA Knight or Santos. So then we're looking at, are we going to get Gunther versus Tama in Saudi Arabia? Or this is the biggie, Gunther versus Randy Orton in Saudi Arabia?
I mean, either way, it sounds absolutely fantastic.
Is Ilya beating Gunther on TV or is Ilya taking his first loss on TV to Gunther? And we're getting Ilya versus Tama or Ilya versus Randy. Oh, my goodness. We're eating good. We're going to get spoiled over the next few weeks.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. Bianca versus Mitchell or Tiffany will be on SmackDown next week. So let's look, as it stands, at the King Queen of the Ring PLE, May 25th in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, of course. We have champion versus champion. No idea what's on the line here. Bragging rights, US title, world title, WWE championship. We don't know yet. But either way, it's Cody Rhodes versus Logan Paul. We have the Intercontinental Championship. Dreams have been answered. Sami Zayn, Chad Gable, Bronson Reed. Banger incoming. Cannot wait for that one. And then we have the Women's World Championship. It's Becky Lynch versus Liv Morgan. Those three matches, plus the potential we have for the King Queen Tournament Finals, this could be a genuinely really good Saudi Arabia show. This has the huge potential right now.
Yeah, definitely. And trying not to sound disrespectful here, but you haven't got any like silly like legend matches in it either.
You don't need them. You don't need to throw money at the legends to go to Saudi Arabia. You don't need it. You're going to have five great matches anyway. And look at Backlash. Had five matches and it was a great show. It didn't feel rushed. It didn't feel underbooked in terms of it was fine.
Yeah.
Saudi Arabia doesn't have to have like 10 matches. It can be a five. You could have a sixth match, get a couple other titles on there, like put some tag title matches on there. Absolutely fine. But yeah, and for us in the UK, Saudi Arabia, that's what, 10 o'clock? Something like that?
Yeah, something like that, isn't it? Yeah.
Perfect. 10 o'clock on a Saturday or Sunday morning. Oh, yes. Okay. Before we get into our admin and wrap the show up, Martin, anything else you want to talk about while we are here?
I don't think anything sort of properly noteworthy that we want to spend too much time on that. Obviously, apart from what's been going on in the company, the only other big stuff that's been going on are obviously bits being exerted from Ronda's new book, which I believe has purely been based on her run in WWE and like no personal life stuff whatsoever.
So the book is about obviously her life and obviously includes her WWE run, her second run, and the first run as well. So I haven't had a chance to read the book yet, but her wrestling related comments have been put out. Someone's obviously read it and has kind of reported on it. So her first run, no comment, no complaints. Like, she was happy with it. She was kept in the loop. The goal was to return WWE after she had her baby. That was the plan. All good. She claims that in her contract, she'd have 1 week a month off because she has her child. But then she'd be getting calls from like John Laurinaitis saying, "We need you to go on to Good Morning America. You work for us. We need you. End of the day. That's it." She claims that Lacey Evans was going to get the women's championship. She was told, "You can tell Lacey, like, you can put her over. It's brilliant." And they changed it to Liv. So then Ronda was then feel guilty for telling Lacey she was getting the belt and then got her hopes up. So she wasn't happy about that. She wants to face Becky Lynch at WrestleMania 39. She was told that was the plan. Paul Heyman, other producer, would say that's what we're building for, but then it never happened. Just she kept getting fobbed off. Then the night before Mania, Paul Heyman told her allegedly, "You're dropping the title to Charlotte Flair. Like, that's it. End of." She didn't like being left out of the loop. She had to fight to have the pairing with Shayna Baszler because apparently Vince McMahon didn't feel that fans would believe they were friends outside of WWE, which is ridiculous to me. Makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, they've been friends for years and years and years. How could that not be believable? And obviously you got the MMA background.
Yeah, and at WrestleMania 31, when Ronda was in that segment with Triple H, Rock and Stephanie, Shayna was at ringside. Like, the four horsewomen were there. Like, Jessamine Duke and... what was the other one? Who's the other one that went to...
Marina Shapira.
And of course, Shayna were all at ringside with Ronda. They were on camera. You've got the story. Your footage shows it. So that makes no sense to me. She wasn't happy that Paul Heyman told her the bloodline stuff with Sami Zayn was planned a year in advance, when before she was told we don't plan that far ahead. She wanted the same travel treatment as Logan and Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. She claimed that the Charlotte Rhea match at WrestleMania 39 went 20 minutes over their allotted time, which people felt was disrespectful to the main event that night, which was the Usos, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn match. Rhea Ripley apparently was punished for that by basically not wrestling for a lot of her title reign in 2023, which if you look back on it, you can kind of see. She didn't wrestle a lot, did she? We saw that on the show before. She was mainly a valet. Like, so there might be something in that. She was told her match with Shayna at SummerSlam would be in the fight pit. They wanted to use the NXT pit cage thing. It was shut down. That's it. Didn't get anything they wanted. She was unhappy with a lot of the stuff in her second run. She claims that there was a lot of tension between Triple H and Vince McMahon. Every time Triple H made a change, some of the production would go back to Vince and he would then change it. When Triple H had his heart surgery, Vince took over NXT, fired a lot of the people. When the hush money scandal came out, Vince blamed John Laurinaitis for it. She's not held back on this. She was very unhappy during her second run. Right. And she's definitely not held back on this one.
No. And it's funny how pretty much 95% of it centers on Triple H was doing this and then Vince squashed it.
Yeah, that's it. And it tallies up with a lot of what we've heard. Like, over that time, it's pretty scary what's come out with. And you look a lot of it and you think, I could see it. I don't know what she has to gain from lying about a lot of this stuff, in all honesty. Ronda Rousey probably not on the Christmas card list of a lot of people at WWE and vice versa, I would say.
No, definitely not. I suppose the other thing, depending on how much you want to dive into it or not, you got Vince and Johnny Ace seemingly joining forces for their court case.
Yeah, we're touching it briefly. So John Laurinaitis, of course, filed his lawsuit and everything, where he claimed that he was essentially a victim as well of Vince McMahon. He's now completely flipped on this and is claiming that basically Vince is right and Vince's statement is accurate and his account of everything. So yeah, Johnny Ace has flipped. What from what we've heard about it and everything, where do you see this going?
It's just one great big fat mess, and I just can't help but feel as Vince maybe got in contact, or as Johnny been advised by whoever. So you know, we're going to have a stronger case if we take this angle now. So you know, if you team up with a big powerful businessman and that, so you know, your chances are probably better. You know, let's not forget, Vince has beaten the US government before.
I think it's safe to say this whole lawsuit story has got a lot of legs to it yet, and there's definitely no end in sight, and there's still so much more that's going to come out, and it's not going to be good. And yeah, no. It's going to be something that's always going to be there for the foreseeable, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Right. Before we go, let you have a couple of things. Of course, all our social media stuff you can now find in one handy place at linktree.com/ringthebellpod. That's linktree.com/ringthebellpod. On there, you'll see all our social media stuff, as I said, as well as our brand new merchandise store, courtesy of Teespring, where you'll find shirts and hoodies, all in a variety of colors and sizes. We ship worldwide, and there's credit plans in there as well if you want to spread payments. Please go and check that out. That's, of course, at linktree.com/ringthebellpod. Regarding this show or any of our other shows in the past in our archive, if you want to give us a five-star rating and review, that's very much appreciated. You can find us on Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music Podcasts, and anywhere else. If you find podcasts, you will find Ring the Bell. Martin, thank you for stepping in. We'll welcome you back very soon. We've got so much more planned. Ross and I have been discussing some specials we're looking at. We've still got our Mania specials we want to look at, some deep dives we want to do. We've got the Reading Corner coming soon. Just a whole lot. And Martin, we hope you'll be along for the ride with us.
Absolutely, mate. It's a pleasure as always being on here.
Lovely. Right. Thank you for listening. We are chugging along the tracks, heading towards Jeddah for the King and Queen of the Ring. We'll be back next week with more happenings from WWE. But for now, this has been Ring the Bell. I've been Andrew.
I've been Martin. Andrew.
Yes.
Ring that bell.